Department, United States versus Eisen, Mr. Frank, I mean.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Casey Pronk, and I represent the defendant appellant, Chazzy Eisen, in this appeal. Your Honors, I think this case now boils down to one issue, and that is the standard that the district court should use to judge statements, hearsay statements, at sentencing that describe statements that are given with government involvement, that describe past events, and that have not been subject to adversarial testing.
You know, Mr. Frank, I want to start you out in a little different way, if you don't mind, because I am a little worried about something, and it is this. You say you're only going to argue the one issue, but, you know, you've claimed ineffective assistance at sentencing, and I take it you're going to stand on your brief on that.
No, I am withdrawing that argument.
Oh, I'm very happy to hear that, so I don't have to lecture. Okay.
I think the issue here is what actually this court decided in United States versus House, and how that relates to the court's past statements in Jones, Santiago, and Bruzzara.
But can you cite any cases where we applied a presumption of unreliability to the hearsay statements of non-testifying co-conspirators for the purposes of sentencing? In other words, we certainly apply that presumption at trial. But when have we ever applied it at a sentencing hearing?
I think that if you look at the Jones, Santiago, and Bruzzara, those all involve statements in the context of sentencing. And this court instructs or approves of the district court's presumption of unreliability in all of those cases. So in Jones, you have the...
Why don't we talk about Santiago? Because... your reliance on Santiago is really misplaced. You've got videotaped confessions of two men that were used to substantiate the defendant's role in, you know, kidnapping, murder, and we bypassed any discussion of the presumption. And, you know, we affirmed the defendant's sentence without deciding the reliability of the recorded confessions in Santiago.
Yes, but I think in Santiago you had other evidence, specifically the letter, where the defendant essentially admitted his involvement in the kidnap and murder. Here, I don't think you have that same type of evidence.
Mr. Frank, could I change your focus for just a moment? I know you don't want to argue inadequacy of counsel today, but inadequacy of counsel is premised on Kimbrough situation. You believe that your client deserved a break under Kimbrough and didn't get it. You'd have to be arguing that to fulfill the prejudice part of the ineffective assistance. Are you arguing that we should notice a Kimbrough error here on direct appeal as a matter of plain error?
No, I'm not, Your Honor.
Why?
Just with this court's past decisions on Kimbrough, and I don't have the citations with me, but this court has made pretty clear that failure to cite Kimbrough is not enough to have an error in sentencing. I think getting back to this issue, I think that this case is very much like these Jones, Santiago, Ingersoll
cases.
Look,
Jones recognized the presumption when admitting a co-conspirator's statement at trial. We're talking about sentencing here.
No,
it's apples and oranges.
I think that Jones had two holdings, actually. That Jones had a holding that said, under the Confrontation Clause, this statement, this confession, should not have been admitted to trial. The second part is, in sentencing, it should also not have been used because it's presumed unreliable. If you read the case, it says, it starts and it goes through an analysis of the Confrontation Clause under Crawford versus Washington. The court then says, in sentencing, we are also concerned that these statements were used to give an enhancement at sentencing for obstruction of justice.
Here's what I fear you're missing. We have repeatedly stated, that a sentencing judge is free to credit testimony that's totally uncorroborated, that come from convicted felons, liars, dealers, paid government informant, self-interested co-conspirators. So Jones just is inapposite.
I think that it goes back to the reliability of these statements, and there is a due process right to be sentenced on the basis of reliability.
Even though we've said that you can be sentenced on totally uncorroborated evidence,
I don't think this court has said that.
Of course we have. We've said it in Johnson. If I had a few minutes, I could probably think of 10 other cases.
Again, I don't think that those cases...
Hearsay is admissible in a sentencing hearing?
Yes, hearsay is definitely admissible at sentencing, but it has to be reliable hearsay. And this court, I believe that this court has set out three principles that govern whether it is reliable hearsay or not at sentencing. And those are whether it was given with...
Reliable hearsay is admissible even in a trial. So you think the criteria are the same?
No, I don't, Your Honor.
Right. And it's a catch-all in the hearsay rule that if it's reliable, it can be admitted.
What's
the difference in standards between trial and sentencing?
I think that Jones recognizes that there is a difference.
Well, what is the
at
difference?
At trial, the standard is Crawford versus Washington.
Then, what's the difference in words, not in cases?
Well, I think the difference is that at trial, hearsay is just not admissible if...
Oh, that's not true. There are a zillion exceptions.
Well, assuming that it does not fall into one of the exceptions.
Well, if it's reliable, it's admissible. So what's the difference at sentencing?
I think the difference is here that it's a slightly lower standard. This is the standard of Ohio versus Roberts. This is not the Confrontation Clause standard of Crawford versus Washington. Your Honors, I see I'm getting into my rebuttal time, so...
Okay, thank you. Frank, Mr. Hartzler.
Thank you again. My impression is that the court understands our
friendlier hearing from Judge Roefner now.
I'd like to go back to the last case if I could. No, I won't. I won't take the court's time unless there are questions that I can clarify. It sounds as though maybe from your comments that perhaps our brief has adequately addressed the issue.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Weissler. Okay, so you were appointed, were you not, Mr. Frank? Well, you don't have rebuttal.
Yes, that's right.
So there's nothing to reply.
Right.
So thank you very much for accepting the appointment and your efforts on behalf of your client. And we thank Mr. Hartzler as well, of course.